Lecture 19, Sinews of War, Finance and Supply.
In our last lecture, we discussed Union and Confederate efforts to keep the ranks of their armies filled. We'll now look at how the two sides raised the money necessary to maintain those armies in the field through a long and grueling war. We'll also assess the relative quality and abundance of the weapons, clothing, and food supplied to soldiers in the opposing armies. And we'll start with the Confederates. The Confederacy struggled mightily to finance its war effort. The key problem lay in the nature of the Southern economy, the antebellum Southern economy that was in place when the war began. Most Confederate capital was invested in land and slaves, as we've talked about before. It wasn't the kind of economy structured to fight what was a modern technological war in the mid-19th century, not an economy geared to produce all the things that that kind of a war would demand. Couldn't produce the railroad tracks, never mind the engines and the rolling stock and all of the other material of war that each side would need. The South had no financial system capable of meeting the demands of a large-scale war as well. As we also talked about earlier, the South did most of its financial business either in the North or in Europe. They didn't have that kind of a financial infrastructure in their own borders. So as they surveyed the fiscal landscape of the war, Jefferson Davis and his principal advisors, they realized as the war went on that there were three ways that they could go about raising money. And we'll look at each one of those in turn. The most obvious way, the way that would probably occur to any of us first, is to tax the citizenry. We'll raise money by levying taxes on our citizens, and we'll, in essence, pay for the war as we go along. Christopher Memminger was the Secretary of the Treasury in the Confederacy, and that is what he pushed for. He said the only sound way to finance this war is to levy taxes on our citizens. But Congress, as with all Congresses, was reluctant to do something that would be unpopular with the voters and the citizenry. Congress was very resistant, the Confederate Congress, to passing taxes, especially early in the war. It's important to remember that there had not been taxes in the United States, these kind of direct taxes intended to raise money in the United States, for about 3.5 decades before the Civil War. No internal taxes levied by the federal government because revenues from tariffs and from the sale of Western lands had brought enough monies into the federal coffers in those antebellum decades to take care of all the expenses of the United States government. So we're not dealing with a citizenry that's used to being taxed by the central government, and that was another problem that the Confederates were facing. Nonetheless, the Congress did pass a small property tax in August of 1861, a very modest one, and as conditions grew more serious later, a comprehensive tax law was put into effect. Now, this included an income tax that had a scale that went from 1% to 15%. There was also an 8% sales tax on consumer goods and a 10% profits tax on wholesalers. But all of these taxes together didn't begin to cover the expenses of a mushrooming war. Didn't come even within shouting distance of it. And when you put all the taxes together, they yielded only about 5% of the money the Confederacy needed to fight the war. They did show, however, just as the National Conscription Act had shown, that the Confederate people were willing to endure the kinds of intrusions from their central government that seemed to be at odds with the state rights, individual freedoms philosophy that they had espoused at the beginning of the war. They're accepting these taxes. The taxes aren't paying for the war, but it shows that the notion of state rights was taking a beating on another front in the Confederacy. So we have taxes. About 5% of the money comes from those taxes. A second way to raise money is by floating bond issues, sell bonds, and get money into the Treasury that way. Now, that's more palatable to the citizenry because you don't have to buy bonds. It's an option on your part. And the Confederacy sold a good number of bonds, in the end enough to pay for about 30%, perhaps as much as 35% of the war.